This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong alongside Carson Sellers with Transitions Life Care. Carson, how are you doing today?
Doing well, and yourself?
I'm doing great, doing great. We're Mary is unfortunately not able to join us today. She is a little bit under the weather, but we're in great capable hands with you, Carson. So we're excited for the program. And with Heart Month coming up, we thought this would be a great time to discuss all things related to the heart. And we are very pleased to welcome on to the program Dr. Kishan Parikh. He is the program director for the heart failure program at Wake Med. Dr. Parikh, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Carson, where should we start?
Yeah, let's dive right in. So just to start off, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what made you want to become a cardiologist?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, actually, my father was a primary care doctor, and I, growing up, would always kind of go to the office with him and see some of these relationships that he formed. And, you know, healthcare has changed a lot over the last couple of decades. But in, I think one of the most rewarding parts is still those kind of relationships that you form with folks over the years. And, you know, I think shortness of breath and some of these kind of symptoms that can happen with heart failure and other cardiovascular diseases can affect so much of the day-to-day, just day-to-day life, that trying to make some impact there is always a very rewarding kind of part of what I do. So I've been practicing here at Wake Med for the past almost 2 years now, and had been over at Duke for several years before that. And I think, you know, we have a very team-based approach here at Wake Med, where we have great nurses and nurse practitioners and a pharmacist, and we work kind of hand-in-hand with the rest of the healthcare team here in the system to try to provide the best care possible to our patients in the community.
Absolutely. And what you guys do is so, so important, especially because heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States. What are some of the most common heart conditions you see in older adults in your practice?
Sure. So, you know, over the last 10 or 20 years, we've really started to recognize, so heart failure in general is kind of a scary sounding word, and doesn't really mean that our heart has failed. And I would say we're starting over the last 10 or 20 years trying to recognize kind of the really big kind of spectrum of folks that can kind of include, that may be living with this for a very long time and not necessarily having a label for it. And the reason why that sometimes matters is because there are some more specific treatments and certain even reversible causes that we're learning more about. But that can include folks that have heart muscle that's just weaker than what your body needs. But again, more increasingly, it's folks that have heart muscle that it actually squeezes fine, but it's kind of more of a stiffer heart muscle where it's not relaxing well, and the pressures can build up. And that can affect people just as much, and can kind of happen gradually. And, you know, oftentimes people can get a little bit used to those symptoms given how gradual they happen. And it's only after we start talking to the family or really kind of probe, do they realize that it's really impacting their day-to-day life. But I would say heart failure, and the technical term for this is heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, but where we have a stiffer heart muscle that can kind of build up over time. But we look for what may be causing it and really focus in on those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Diving in a little bit deeper, around heart failure. There are a lot of misconceptions, and it can be a big and scary word for many. What, yeah, like, around the technicality of it, and what are some of the common causes? What is it technically?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's maybe the most important thing of this is just it doesn't mean that the heart has failed or that it's going to stop. And to the point where I even start kind of talking about it in terms of heart function and how we improve heart function rather than the heart failing. And right. And the truth is that we have treatments that can actually improve things. So failure, like you said, is exactly right. It's a misconception. The vast majority of people have room for improvement. But what it does kind of imply is that we have some symptoms that can be just being tired or having shortness of breath or some swelling in the legs or abdomen that are related to the pump function of the heart not handling the circulation and the needs as well as it should. Right. And that can happen for a lot of different reasons, but that's just the general kind of definition.
Right, absolutely. So how is heart failure different from a heart attack?
Sure. So a heart attack is a very sudden kind of event where the muscle of the heart all of a sudden isn't getting the nutrition and the oxygen that it needs because the supply to that muscle got cut off. Now, a heart attack can lead to heart failure over time if the muscle doesn't get recovered. But heart failure is more, I would say, generally is a gradual kind of event. A lot of times it's happening over weeks or months. And it's something that may not fix itself right away, but can take weeks or months to get better too. So I would say a heart attack is just one of several different causes of heart failure.
Absolutely. Okay. And so who is most at risk for heart failure? And what are early warning signs of heart failure to be aware of?
Sure. So that's also a good question. So I think, to this date, I would say having high blood pressure for a long time that's not really well controlled. And that's why we call hypertension kind of the silent killer, is just trying to monitor something as easy as blood pressure. But high blood pressure and kind of untreated coronary disease. So those folks that did have a big heart attack or chest pain, there are reasons to try to kind of stay on top of those things so that we can avoid the kind of downstream consequences of having a weaker heart muscle or symptoms of heart failure. As we learn more about the stiffer heart muscle, not just people with weaker heart muscles, but the stiffer heart muscle, we know that there are certain really kind of things that we see all the time that make people more likely to develop that. And that includes heart rhythm issues like atrial fibrillation. It includes being overweight, having untreated sleep apnea. So if you're snoring a lot at night or partner is telling you that you may have stopped breathing, there's actually links between that and developing a stiffer heart muscle over time. Being sedentary, we've learned about how just staying active and keeping your stamina up is actually one of the more important ways of improving prognosis and staying out of the hospital. So some of these kind of going back to the basics risk factors are really important for that particular type of heart failure where you have the stiffer heart muscle.
We are speaking with Dr. Kishan Parikh, and we are discussing all things related to the heart as February was Heart Month. We got this one in a little bit after the buzzer, but we thought this is always helpful information for folks to have. So we've got another segment with Dr. Parikh, and we're going to continue our conversation with him right after this. Stick around. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680 WPTF News Talk Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF AM 680 and WPTF.com with your host, Mary Lucas and Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong, here with Carson Sellers of Transitions Life Care, and we are speaking with Dr. Kishan Parikh, who is the program director for the heart failure program at Wake Med. And we are talking about all things related to the heart, as February was Heart Month. We've kind of gone over some basics on what heart failure is. And now, Carson, we are trying to get over some items on prevention, making sure that we can prevent heart failure in any shape and form.
Absolutely. Diving right in with that, would you say that there are ways to prevent heart failure? And if so, could you share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so much of the work can get done by just preventing, and or even if we're in the earlier stages of it, of being aggressive about treating those things that we know that can really drive the progression of it. Because I guess the important point is that this is more of a spectrum, and it's not like all of a sudden your heart's failed. It's very much a spectrum where you can have some earlier warning signs and ways of preventing all the way to where it's more advanced. And I would say in terms of preventing, I think the best things you can do are to the common sense things that you kind of grew up hearing, where you're trying to work on controlling your weight, eating the right foods, where we're following a heart healthy diet. And you can learn more about that from the American Heart Association. The DASH diet, D-A-S-H, is a good one to follow. Trying to work on your blood pressure and making sure that it's controlled, and kind of setting those guidelines based on your other risk factors with your primary care doctor. Regular exercise, and you know, there's more and more evidence that just getting yourself out and doing moderate intensity exercise 3 to 4 times a week, and spending around 15 to 20 minutes each time, or more intense exercise for potentially a shorter amount of time, but getting regular exercise routinely is the key. And we're talking about, it could be as something as simple as going out for a brisk walk, to getting on your bicycle or elliptical, a rowing machine, things that will get your heart rate up and breathing a little bit harder. You know, if we can follow those things, you know, diet and getting routine exercise and working on our blood pressure, we will actually prevent a lot of heart failure.
Absolutely. That's really awesome advice. So in addition to a few of those things that you can do earlier before a diagnosis, are there any heart healthy habits that you can introduce to your life later, even after a diagnosis?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's never too late to make some modifications in our diet, you know, cutting out the extra salt at the table, trying to get more vegetables in. I think there's always incremental kind of changes we can make to do that. And, you know, as we get older and deal with more joint pains and things that might get in the way of us going out for that bike ride, I think just modifying our routine a little bit, getting those extra steps in, or making it a point with a step counter to hit a certain level every day, or joining your Silver Sneakers program at the Y. These are things that, you know, just a little bit will go a long way, and the benefits you'll start seeing within a few weeks to months, and it'll help you with your overall quality of life. So I think just even setting smaller goals for yourself and kind of meeting yourself halfway, I think is important.
Yeah, absolutely. So pivoting a little bit here, how have you seen treatment options for heart failure evolve over time?
Yeah. Well, we have more options. And, you know, we've spent several minutes really talking about these important kind of treatments that are not necessarily medications. We do have medications as well for treating people with either weak heart muscles and stiff heart muscles. And although these medicines are not cures, they've been shown to help people live longer, stay out of the hospital, recover that heart function in a lot of cases. And so our goals are really combining some of these medicines with these other kind of lifestyle improvements. I think we are trying to be careful so that we're not, you know, giving someone, you know, 10 new medicines to start all at once, but it's more of an individual conversation that we have with people, and trying to make sure that if they're getting on medicines, that they understand the reasons for them and what we're looking for improvements, and also, of course, any potential side effects. But I think our treatments actually have gotten better over the last 5 to 10 years after having really the same medicines for 20 plus years. So there are more options, and I think that's a good thing for patients.
Absolutely. So when you think about how you approach care for your patients, what do you focus on for those with heart failure as you think about quality of life?
Yeah. I think getting to know our patients and not just them, but their loved ones, and how heart failure has impacted their quality of life and, you know, what their goals are. It really helps us kind of tailor what our treatments are. You know, if we have to think about how medicines might interact with each other, what someone's preference is, and kind of adjust to that. I think we do start having conversations with folks who about things like what Transitions does with trying to make sure that we also focus on symptoms and when to kind of not be as aggressive with these medicines. And so much of this is kind of based on our relationships and getting to know them over time.
Right. That's very, very important. Just as we wrap up here, just a final question. Can you speak to the importance of early detection and regular checkups, especially for those that have history of heart disease in their family?
Yeah, I think just like we were saying earlier, there are so many times where we'll see someone who's had high blood pressure for a very long time, and then it's kind of progressed. So, and I'm almost certain that if we had caught those blood pressures or treated that, we could avoid being where we were. I think the same thing goes with diabetes and kind of just talking about things like our weight. The family history part is also interesting because there are some other kind of more specific causes of heart failure, one of them being amyloidosis, that we see pop up. And as we kind of ask folks about their family history, we often do get answers of, oh yeah, they did have this condition. And so if you have a family history, if someone's kind of had heart failure at a young age, there could be a genetic cause, especially if it's in a first degree relative. And I think it's important to talk to either your primary care doctor or a cardiologist about that. Probably get an EKG, potentially an echocardiogram. In our heart failure clinic, we've actually been doing more genetic testing to look for potential kind of risk factors that are present. And that helps us kind of with screening and monitoring people over time. So having that conversation and making sure that your primary care or your cardiologist is aware of the family history, especially in our first degree relatives, is really important, because there's more that we can do with that information than we could before.
helpful stuff. We've been speaking with Dr. Kishan Parikh. He is the program director of the Heart Failure Program at Wake Med. Dr. Parikh, we really want to thank you for your time and your expertise today. This was wonderful information for our audience.
I'm happy to be here. And again, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. And we are going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. 60 minutes devoted to giving you all the information you need when caring for a loved one with Mary Lucas and Jason Kong. If you have questions for the show, you can email agingmatters@transitionslifecare.org.
You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. I am Jason Kong here with Carson Sellers of Transitions Life Care, and we are very pleased to have another one of our own of Transitions Life Care on with us for this next segment. That is Hannah Brown. Hannah is a palliative care physician with Transitions Life Care, and we're talking about palliative care because, Carson, I've been involved with this program for a long time, but I've also know that palliative care is not something that a whole lot of people understand. So any opportunity that we have to discuss it in depth, I think, is always helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had a great overview of heart failure in our first couple segments. Now we want to dive into disease progression. When we think about palliative care and hospice for heart failure patients, how do both play a role in disease progression and management, both for patient and caregiver?
Yeah, that's a great question. I primarily work in the hospital setting over at Wake Med, and I'm often meeting folks when they've hit a bottom. They're coming in with a heart failure exacerbation, and sometimes it's the first one they've ever had. Other times this is their 10th admission in 6 months. And often our palliative care team gets consulted and folks are saying kind of what comes next? How do we plan for what comes ahead? And part of how we do that is, and what Dr. Parikh said is so important, to get to know someone and what's most important to them, and talk about how do we improve quality of life, whatever that means for that patient and that family. So we can get involved at any age and stage of an illness journey. And that includes heart failure. And as Dr. Parikh said, it's a wide spectrum of causes. So the conversations we might be having can vary quite a bit.
Absolutely. So you have a patient who has been with you on palliative care, let's say. What are some signs it may be time to consider hospice instead?
That's a great question. So I would say one of the most common things we is what I was referencing earlier. Someone's coming back and forth to the hospital a lot. And at some point, we meet a patient and family and they say, you guys are great here in the hospital, but I don't want to keep doing this. I feel my body slowing down. I feel like my time and energy are limited. And this is not how I want to spend that limited time and energy. Right. So that's when we open the door to talk about hospice, right? And I'm often describing palliative care as an umbrella term where we're talking about these important things, right? Quality of life, improving symptoms to improve quality of life, and also making sure that the medical team's plan matches up with what's most important to the patient and family. And under that umbrella is the insurance benefit we call hospice. And I know hospice is a much more emotionally laden word. Most of the time, people don't know what palliative is, and hospice is just really, really scary to hear. So our job is to just talk through what are those resources and supports provided through each type of care.
Absolutely. So another hypothetical, when you have a patient in palliative care, what are some of the key goals you focus on for heart failure patients, especially as the disease kind of progresses?
Sure. I would say it's twofold. One is we're focusing on symptom management. Now, often we're working closely with the cardiology team in that regard because many of the heart failure treatments are effectively palliative in nature because they help us feel better. And that's really what palliative means, to palliate, to soothe, to ease or lessen a burden. We're talking some of the medications that might be familiar to our listeners that are pretty common, something like Lasix or the fluid pill is what a lot of people call it. When the heart is not pumping as effectively, the fluid builds up, as Dr. Parikh said, you know, around the lungs or in the legs, in the belly, and that fluid pill can help get it off. It's also called a diuretic. So we might be managing those along with our heart failure team. The other thing we're talking about for a patient in palliative care who has heart failure is some of that, what comes next. And while we don't have a crystal ball, of course, there is some predictability to a lot of heart failure and a lot of chronic disease. It might be unpredictable in the time course, right? And we'll have some patients that say, oh, this is, mama's been doing this for 10 years, and she always bounces back, you know?
Right.
And we have other patients, it's the first time in the hospital, and they're wondering, how did I get so sick so fast, right? One metaphor that one of our wonderful social workers often uses is that we'll see kind of the ball doesn't bounce back quite as high, right? With right. each subsequent hospitalization or heart failure exacerbation, the ball doesn't quite bounce up quite as high. So if we know that that comes ahead, again, not having that crystal ball at the exact timeline, what do we want to prioritize? Again, for a lot of patients, that revolves around going to the hospital or the emergency room or not. That can involve talking about what we call advanced care planning, doing something like an advanced directive or living will, and helping your family members know, if I were to end up in this sort of situation and I couldn't make medical decisions for myself, these are the people I want to make medical decisions for me, and this is the guidance I would give you. Okay.
Absolutely. So what are some of the most common symptoms heart failure patients experience as they near the end of life? And how do you go about treating and managing those symptoms?
That's a good question. So often heart failure goes along with other illnesses as well. So it's totally unique for each patient in that sense. However, the common ones we'll see are shortness of breath, fatigue, sometimes nausea. And those are all going to be treated a little differently. Sometimes, again, we're working on getting that extra fluid off to the extent that someone's body is allowing us to do that. And other times we're using other medications to help with those symptoms. And what I always tell families and patients is some of these medicines that we're talking about sometimes can be really scary sounding if we're talking about something like morphine, right? However, that can help with shortness of breath, and people can be taking low doses of morphine to help with shortness of breath for a very long period of time. What we're doing is responding to someone's body and their needs. And so we're not hastening or, you know, speeding up or slowing down a process that's going on. We're trying to smooth out that journey. So again, we're going to work really closely with a patient and their family and work through any concerns they have about medications, and making sure that any medication that is being prescribed is helping contribute to their comfort and quality of life.
We are speaking with Hannah Brown. Hannah is the palliative care physician with Transitions Life Care, and we're talking about palliative care and how it relates to the heart, as we've been discussing the heart in depth on this episode, as February was Heart Month, and we are going to continue our conversation with Hannah right after this. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care. Here's your host, Jason Kong.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680, WPTF News Talk Traffic. Jason Kong here with Carson Sellers, and we are speaking with Hannah Brown. Hannah is a palliative care physician with Transitions Life Care, and we are talking about palliative care and how it relates to the heart as we are focusing on February was Heart Month, and we really wanted to do a program that was all things related to the heart. And Carson, we've discussed a good amount so far, but you know, we want to talk more about what it's like to live with heart disease, heart failure, and how we can make things as comfortable as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So sometimes a barrier for many when it comes to hospice can be the thought of going off of medications to come into services. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the common medications for heart failure patients and the hospice approach around these medications?
Of course. Yes, I think that's a really common fear that people have is that if they enroll in the hospice benefit, all of a sudden all these medications are going to be stripped away. And that's not the case. And a lot of our job is to provide education and reassurance to patients and families about that. What we do is go through each medication and say, is this related to their terminal diagnosis? And is this helping promote quality and comfort? If the answer is not to one of those questions, then that's an individual conversation with a patient and family. We're always wanting to make sure that we're working as a team and as a unit. The goal is never to come in and rip away everything that a patient's been doing, often very diligently for years and years. You know, I've got plenty of patients that say, well, my cardiologist, you know, Dr. Parikh, right? Dr. Parikh told me to take this medicine. And they've been on it for years and years. So we're having a sit down conversation and saying, all right, what is the medicine doing for us now based on where your body's at? And is that worth continuing or not? And some patients, they get to a point where they say, I'm kind of done with this. I don't really want to take these medications anymore. They either don't make me feel well or I'm just tired of swallowing this many. Again, we're letting the patient dictate where we're going next with the medications.
Absolutely. So kind of piggybacking off of that in these conversations and just navigating this process, how do you help patients with heart failure balance treatment with the importance of quality of life?
Such a good question. You know, I think one of the things I love most about my job is that I get to talk about this every day. And it's different for each one of us, as it should be. And so when a patient is telling me that this is what their quality of life is, the way we do that is by listening, by hearing from them what is most important. And that comes out through these ongoing conversations that you're having with with your palliative care team over time, with the hospice team over time. And again, it's all saying, this is where my body's at now, and that means this is what's most important to me. For some patients, they're really looking forward to a particular date or event. We might be talking about, you know, their daughter's wedding or the birth of a grandchild. We can talk about, hey, yeah, let's work towards that. Or perhaps should we have a celebration now? Do we need to change that timeline up a little bit because of where your body's at? The goal is once we've had these established relationships with patients and getting that trust that we can have these types of conversations in an open and honest way with compassion leading the way. So again, someone's quality of life is going to differ from one person to the next, how they define that, what contributes to that. And our goal is to say, is this working and contributing to your quality of life or not? And if not, let's talk about it.
Absolutely. Having these conversations is extremely important. And I'm sure you've seen a lot of this and know how to answer this very well because of how many conversations you've had to have in your line of work. But how have you seen living with heart problems impact your patients emotionally or mentally? And do you have any advice for caregivers in ways they can support their loved one throughout this process?
That's such an important question, Carson. I think so often we get caught up in the medical diagnoses and the physical symptoms that come along with that, that we're not necessarily putting that into the context of a whole person. We see lots of mental, emotional, psychosocial challenges for patients living with chronic illness. I would say a classic example, a patient with heart failure, they're used to going out and doing things for themselves, driving or maybe doing a hobby, going out hunting or fishing. And over time, their heart failure might prevent them from doing those kinds of things. And that can lead to a loss of independence or a change in independence. And it can lead to a change in the things that bring someone joy in that quality of life. Again, it all boils down to that. So I think recognizing that and helping people name that is really important. Part of what I love about my job is that I work on a team, and we've got social workers that are integrated into our team. If someone's here in the hospital, we work closely with our chaplains. And what's so important about that is that they bring another lens of training to the table, how to talk to patients and families and approach these kind of conversations. How do we talk about where feeling sad over someone's loss of independence starts to blur into full-blown clinical depression? These are the kinds of conversations that are really important, and why we have to work on a team, and that includes our cardiology colleagues and our heart failure team. I think for caregivers, that's such an important question, and it's so hard, because often the caregivers are feeling some of that themselves. They're watching their loved one change, and sometimes roles can reverse. We hear that a lot from, you know, all of a sudden adult children are taking care of their parent, and that caregiving role has shifted. In that sense, we can say a lot of things, right? Well, you know, it's a lot easier to say than do, I found. The one thing that I think is helpful consistently is to tell the patient and their caregivers, start to reach out or identify people in your kind of circle of trust and figure out what their strengths are. You know, some friends are going to be the ones that can help drive you somewhere. Other, you know, neighbor might be the one that can bring over a meal. Find those folks and help identify those. So that way when someone says, well, how, you know, just let me know how I can help, you say, oh, I have something really specific that I need. You know, I need a meal, or I need a ride to this doctor's appointment. It's really important. And most people are quite happy to help if they're offering.
Absolutely. It seems like it all comes back to these open and honest conversations. Wrapping up here, for families caring for a loved one with advanced heart failure, what advice do you have for maintaining their own well-being during this time? Like, we all know it can be very stressful, so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think reaching out to that village, as we were talking about, is really important. I also think, actually, advanced care planning can be helpful. And so sometimes patients are at a place where physically they're not able to take care of, let's say, for instance, dad is aging, and he's used to always being kind of in charge and being able to take care of things around the house, take care of his family, the finances, and his adult children are realizing that can't continue that way anymore. Sometimes encouraging patients to fill out something like an advance directive in that way, they're still taking care of their family because they're saying, here, let me take this burden off of you. And so often the caregiver is saying, oh, no, dad, you know, I'm going to take care of you no matter what. It's okay. But it can be very mutually beneficial for both the patient and their loved one to have this burden removed, because the patient's saying, here's a way I can keep taking care of you by letting you know how to best take care of me. And that often opens up conversations for families about, well, what is considered a burden right now? We hear that word a lot, where a patient says, well, I don't want to be a burden on my loved one. And the loved one says, no, you're not a burden, right? So helping to bring all of that out into the open and clarify that is going to help us best identify how to help the patient, of course, but also how to help the caregiver. What do they need help with to better take care of their loved one? And how can we relieve some of those stressors? So I start to sound like a broken record, I fear, but yes, those open, honest conversations about quality of life and being honest with, you know, with your loved one about, look, if I end up in this situation, this is what I would want. That can do wonders.
That's great advice and great information, because having everyone on the same page really does lead to much better outcomes. We had the pleasure of speaking with Hannah Brown. She is a palliative care physician with Transitions Life Care. Hannah, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
I want to remind everyone that if you are in need of some additional resources, transitionslifecare.org is a great resource for you. There's so much information on the site. There's information about connecting, how to get involved and volunteer if that is something that you find would be rewarding for you. Check out transitionslifecare.org, transitionslifecare.org. If you missed any part of today's episode, you can find it at WPTF.com, as well as looking for Aging Matters anywhere where you can get podcasts. Aging Matters is there. Search for it there. You can find this episode as well as our full archive of episodes as well for Aging Matters. That's going to do it for us today. On behalf of Carson Sellers, I'm Jason Kong, thanking you for listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680, WPTF News Talk Traffic.
You've been listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF AM 680 and WPTF.com. For more information, log on to transitionslifecare.org.